Inside the Cross Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Lacrosse Industry Podcast. This is the seventh of seven podcasts coming away from the inaugural Lacrosse Industry Summit, which was held in Philadelphia in May ahead of the NCAA Championships. I am Terry Foy, joined by Dan Flynn.
Hey, Terry, how's it going?
It's going really well, Dan, and I'm really excited about this podcast today because it was one of the more heartening conversations that occurred at the Industry Summit. Certainly, the way that I positioned this conversation heading into the summit was that I had never seen a better mainstream example of lacrosse than the Dick's Sporting Goods campaign when they partnered with Harlem Lacrosse and Leadership in the summer and fall of 2015. And so in this conversation, you get to hear Matt Kinnear ask the principal organizers of that campaign how it all came together. So on the Harlem Lacrosse side, we have Joel Sensor, who is one of the most magnetic folks when it comes to his ability to communicate the message and practical path of the Harlem Lacrosse entity, as well as brand director from DSG, Frank Egreck, who is a really savvy, interesting guy himself.
Yeah, the Sports Matter campaign that they produced was seen everywhere. And I remember family members, friends who aren't necessarily as passionate about lacrosse as we are would say, hey, did you see that ad with the Dick's Sporting Goods with the kids playing lacrosse? So it definitely resonated across party lines, so to speak.
And what was so enthralling for me is that they went full bore into this idea. And so for anybody who's a fan of football or high school football, you might be familiar with Friday Night Lights. It obviously was turned into a major motion picture as well as a TV series on NBC. Well, that was based off a book.
Great show, Terry. Hey, great show.
Clear eyes, full hearts.
Can't lose.
That show is based off of a book by Buzz Bissinger, one of the most notable writers in the world of sports media, who tackled the story of Harlem Lacrosse as kind of the opening salvo of this campaign. You know, so from that point through all of the video and television promotion that ran during the 2015 college football season, you know, this was a mainstream effort to shine a bright spotlight, not simply on the sport of lacrosse, but this one particular project within lacrosse that has incredible applications and implications, not only for the sport, but for the lives of all these kids who are involved in this program going forward. And understanding how it came to be is a really interesting conversation to listen to.
Terry, this is a good example of the type of things you'll hear at the second Lacrosse Industry Summit, which will be Thursday, January 19th at the Hilton, Baltimore, in advance of the U.S. Lacrosse Convention, which will be Friday through Sunday. You can get your tickets and more information for the Lacrosse Industry Summit at insidelacrosse.com/summit. So here is our own editor-in-chief of IL, Matt Kinnear, with Joel and Frank.
I've been looking forward to this session for all day long. It's going to be about how sports mattered and the Dick's marketing campaign with Harlem Lacrosse and Leadership, and it'll be moderated by our editor-in-chief at Inside Lacrosse, Matt Kinnear.
Guys, everyone, thank you for being here. I'm really excited about this one. I feel like a lot of the things we've been talking about today, the growth of the sport, the exposure of the sport, are all typified in this one example right here with Harlem Lacrosse and Leadership and Dick's Sporting Goods Sports Matter campaign. So Frank, I'll start with you. You know, from Dick's Sporting Goods, the Sports Matter campaign. You know, what are your goals, and how did Harlem Lacrosse and Leadership? You know, it seems like a good marriage of what the goals you're trying to accomplish.
Sure. And if you're not familiar with the program, basically what we're trying to do is trying to revive sports back. The programs back into culture. There's some pretty alarming statistics we came across as we were working on this project a few years back. And probably the most alarming one is that 27% of U.S. public high schools won't have team sports by the year 2020. And when you hear that statistic, you kind of scratch your head and you're like, how is that possible? And so we felt that we had a platform to be able to kind of raise awareness of this issue. Most people will say, well, obviously it's important to you guys because you guys sell sporting goods and, you know, it's important. But on the flip side, we've kind of turned around our company philosophy, and we landed on basically a one-sentence statement that took us years to write. And when we looked at it, we're like, oh, my God, how did it take that long to get there? But basically at the end of it, it was, we believe as a company that sports make people better. And it's important for us to get the youth playing sports again and getting it back into schools, because we think that's where the biggest power is when you connect sports and schools together. You see a lot of great things, and that's pretty evident with the Harlem Lacrosse, and that's how we ended up kind of partnering with them to kind of use them as the megaphone to tell the story of what we're trying to do. And last month, we had a film that debuted also in the lacrosse category. It was called Keepers of the Game. It's going to be on ESPN 2 on the 30th, so if you get a chance, if you haven't seen it yet, you need to check it out. But what we're trying to do with all these programs is really just raise the awareness of this issue. And so when we were back at Tribeca at the film festival, we had a lot of big name folks that were willing to participate in our panel to kind of talk about the issues. And anywhere from Tom Brady to Serena Williams to Skipper from ESPN. And as we started to kind of have that conversation, we realized that we as a company, as well as all these influential folks out there, need to get together, because everybody has their own initiatives. And everybody's making their own little impact, but is there a way that we can kind of turn this around and start to get an understanding? And Skipper actually said something very interesting in that panel. He said, as you're watching the political debates out there, nobody's talking about this. And it probably should be, because the way we view it is that kids are our biggest resource in this country. And the fact that these kids don't have the opportunities to play sports like we do is pretty alarming.
You know, as someone who's invested in the sport for a living, covers the sport for a living, I was amazed at how many of my, every time something happens in the lacrosse world that kind of reaches the mainstream, I get a flood of text messages from all my friends like, hey, did you see this thing that happened? I can't think of a thing that happened that I got more of that than this commercial, the series of commercials, the website activation, just the various different mediums that this touched. Joel, this matches what your guys' goals are as well at Harlem Lacrosse and leadership. Getting that exposed to this many people and the way it was executed, how did that all come out in your opinion?
I mean, it was great. We went from a startup, nonprofit, coaching lacrosse on a handball court to a national program overnight. We had, when I started in 2013, we had two boys programs and two schools in Harlem. We're going to have 11 programs at the end of the year. We're going to have school-based programs in Boston, in Baltimore, 4 or 5 in New York. I'm sure my numbers aren't adding up, so don't quote me too hard on this. And then we're moving here in Philadelphia in 2017. So, from our end, we're not professional storytellers. We're lacrosse coaches, and we are nonprofit workers. And to have Harlem Lacrosse is kind of a complicated thing. We're a school-based nonprofit that sticks full-time staff members, generally people you probably know covered in college lacrosse, and they stick in a school in Harlem from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and they coach a middle school lacrosse team, but it's not really about lacrosse. We know your teachers. We know your grades. You have to come to study hall every day to be a part of the team. And really, we're just connecting lacrosse with better grades, better behavior, all kind of that stuff for increased outcomes. And Dick's Sporting, that's a hard story to tell for a nonprofit worker and a lacrosse coach. I mean, it just took me like a couple minutes. And Dick's Sporting Goods and obviously Buzz Bissinger, they got right to it you guys could tell it in a minute better than we could ever effectively tell our story. So, we went from playing on a handball court now to being able to be a national program with national aims.
And Frank, for you at Dick's, how did this kind of reach your goals? Your Sports Matter campaign, Harlem Lacrosse, it's the perfect tipping point of exactly what you're trying to do. How did this end result? How do you measure success, and how did it help you reach your goals?
Sure, I think it's a big testament to what the folks at Harlem Lacrosse are doing. Sometimes you have to have a good story to become a good storyteller. And that story is really an incredible story, what they're actually doing. And you see the commitment that they have for these kids. So I think a lot of it within us, the goals that we're trying to kind of accomplish is trying to reverse this trend. You know what I mean? And trying to allow people to kind of see this value. And when we talk about some of the storytelling, We kind of took a little bit of a page from the playbook of the ESPN 30 for 30s. And what starts to resonate with people out there as you're starting to tell some of these stories is you have to find something that's going to hit a chord within someone. Or most, that what seems to work a lot is when you take something that some people know about, kind of, and then you dig a little bit deeper, and then they're like, wow, I didn't know that. So when you watch, like, the Duke lacrosse story, you know what I mean, what mainstream kind of was, and then when you watch that documentary, you're like, well, I kind of knew the story, but I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. And it really kind of hits a chord because it informs you. And so when we took, we found the story with these folks at Harlem Lacrosse is, you know, you don't think of, you know, inner city New York like that and lacrosse being tied together. It piques a natural interest. And then you have someone like Buzz Bissinger, which was also purposeful because we wanted to tell the story genuinely. And we knew it was a risk for us because he is not a big fan, obviously, after his whole Friday Night Lights story and experience and his experience with these sports. So we didn't know where the story was going to go, but we believe in it. And so what they're doing with their program, we knew that if Buzz Bissinger was confronted with these folks, that story was going to tell itself, and it did.
You know, authenticity, you know, being genuine in the storytelling is really important to why this resonated so much with the community. Joel, you're turning over the storytelling of something that's very important to you to a brand, and that's got to be at least a little worrisome at the beginning. How did they kind of quell your worries and you know, kind of portray this in an authentic manner?
Right. They were just super flexible and open the entire time, and we were really intentional about the kids we were selecting to be focused, and they just from the beginning they just kind of were like alerted our fears about, you know, because when does this become exploitative and when is not? It's a real concern, especially when you're dealing with middle school students, you know. So they were just, I guess, actually, let me rewind. The most important thing they did is they really embedded themselves in our program and in our community. Like Buzz Bissinger is a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist, writer, and he was showing up at 7:30 a.m. to 150th and 7th Avenue to watch, you know, shooting drills. Like they were really embedding themselves in our program and with our kids in ways that made us believe that they wanted to tell the right story and promote our kids rather than exploit them. I think beyond that, we worked together with them really well, and we picked the right kids. So we weren't, we picked kids who we didn't think it was just going to be, who we think could tell their own story and tell it well and not, you know, get, and would have a comfort level in doing it, but would also be able to handle whatever else came afterwards.
It's a hard thing, too. I think when, you know, so when we approach them, it's some of the directors that we used, it was a couple that are directors, they're the Mercandottis, it's a husband and wife team. And again, one of the reasons we work with them is because they're genuine themselves. A lot of the storytelling that they do, they care about these issues and they care about our country and all the social issues that are going on. And so when we do a project like this, we try to find people that are doing it for the right reasons. And so when they actually kind of come into their backyard, it's a hard thing for these kids to talk about. I mean, you know, it's pretty embarrassing, I think, too, sometimes for some of these kids as they're telling their stories, and they're pretty personal. But as they start to kind of realize the process and they sit down with these folks, and it's embedding with them to make sure that we're not going to exploit them. We just want people to understand their story because their story is actually very similar to a lot of people. And once they realize that that story is not unique just to them, it feels more personal to them because they're living it, that they have an opportunity to kind of spread that story and get people across the country who can relate to it, then they become a lot more open.
Yeah, and on that note, the Mercandottis, is that how I say it? The directors who filmed, they just sent the students they worked with, they just sent calculators for them to help them on the SAT that's coming up. So talking about really embedding themselves and becoming part of this process with the kids, you know, they still keep in touch with the kids. They're sending things, whatever the kids need. You know, they really wanted to know the kids and do more than just, make a commercial and leave. So,
you know, you spoke of the impact that this had on Harlem lacrosse and leadership as an organization, but the kids, you know, the kids that are featured in it and the kids that are in the program, the kids that are coming up in the program, individually, what was the effect of this project on them?
I guess three kids were primarily featured on the commercial side. And I mean, knock on a lot of wood. they had unbelievable years, and I don't know. I mean, kind of all evidence would probably point to them. I, you know, this is a point of concern to be on ESPN every other day. But Tyler, who was the main commercial kid, just got a full scholarship to go to Episcopal High School in Virginia and, you know, had a great academic year and, you know.
Yeah, we joke around a little bit about it internally because we've had a little bit of luck with the first documentary that we did, We Could Be King, here in Philly. And the program, they turned their program on when we were filming them. What's going on with Harlem Lacrosse and also with Keepers of the Game with the Salmon River Girls. They won 2 games in the last 4 years and they ended up winning their sectional titles. So I kind of joke around. I'm from Cleveland, so sorry anybody. But actually not sorry, you guys probably don't care. But the but I'm like, I got to get a film crew out filming some of the rounds or somebody just hope that maybe they turn them around a little bit. But.
You know, part of the way we pitch this, it's, you know, the best mainstream exposure that the sport has seen. You know, we're in the post-Duke lacrosse era where a lot of things that you've seen about the sport aren't exactly in a positive light. Joel, you're a lacrosse guy. So seeing something you're involved with have such a positive reflection on the sport, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, great. Hungry for more, I guess. You know, it's we're expanding for a reason in that we think our stories have power and we think our model is great and we think we're a program that can continue to have a great effect. So if you know, them shining the light on us, is it makes us feel great, but only if we can kind of leverage it and continue to make the impact that we're making and the work that we're doing. So,
And Frank, were you surprised at all to kind of find this story within this sport?
Yeah, it was something that was totally different. I mean, it piqued our curiosity when we're like, you know, how does lacrosse make its way into Harlem? You know, and what does that do? And then we started to dig deeper within the program and educate ourselves. It totally made sense. And again, it's the same struggle that's happening everywhere. You know, when you look at all these high schools and all these sports programs that are starting to kind of go away, and, you know, lacrosse is getting a lot of brunt of that because what ends up happening is you have a lot of club teams. As these schools' budgets get taken away, you know, the big sports are the ones that survive. They're football and they're basketball because they're drumming money back into the schools, and that's why they're existing. And what we're trying to do is trying to bring all sports back into the high schools because it's important. And you got to start that with the kids, you know. I think, again, there's a cultural shift that needs to happen and go back to the way it was and allow this connection between education and athletics together because it actually brings the community more together. Because what ends up happening, it's no downfall against club sports because there's a need, at least kids are out there doing something. But when you start to have shipping kids off to all these different other places and stuff like that, it loses that sense of community. And we believe that community is what is strong and what kind of builds that. And, you know, when you tie in sports with the education, and so these teachers are invested into it, the coaches are part of the program, they're seeing them on a day-to-day basis. It's important.
And Joel, you come from a journalism background. You know, you've been a reporter, you've been a journalist. How much more comfortable did that make you, or was it the opposite way? Did it make you a little more reserved, being kind of the central focus, not the central focus, but one of the focuses of this story here?
It was definitely surreal in some ways. Buzz Bissinger is like my childhood hero. You know, I'm reading all his books, and there he is following me around for a week. I think when it's kind of granular and you've got your coaching hat on and you're just focused on the next play and the next rep and the next day, that kind of stuff kind of falls to the wayside. And I guess you hear about that some in reality television where, like, they're like, oh, the camera was just, like, it became part of it. Like, credit to Dick's Sporting Goods, like, it really just, you know, it didn't feel like an extra week to me or an extra day. You guys were there for 2 weeks. It felt like just a normal week to me in every way. I think, if anything, what my journalism background has helped me with was more just knowing the kind of loaded questions some people can ask and how that can get twisted and framed in ways that we don't want it to be framed because it doesn't reflect reality, probably. And so I was just, if nothing else, I think I was just cognizant of that. So
and actually, just, I don't know if we ever told you this, we were in the same boat when, you know, when we got the first script that Buzz wrote, we were, like, really nervous. We're like, oh, my God, what is he going to say? You know, but at the end of it, you trust in the process and you trust in what they're doing. And then when it came across, we're like, great, it's awesome.
Yeah, he wrote, like, when he wrote about me, he wrote about how I hadn't shaved at all and I was, like, I was just on coffee the whole time and everything else. And it was kind of true. He had just kind of made his way into the practice and never left. And I think that was probably the success. A lot of the campaign was just a realness in storytelling that was only, the only way that happened was by showing up at 8 a.m. to watch shooting drills. So,
Frank, two-part question here. Internally at Dick's, you know, at Dick's and, with, and within the folks at the Sports Matter campaign, just overall, what was the reaction? How did it go over kind of internally within your company? And kind of what would you say is the number one lesson to brands kind of doing a campaign like this that you can kind of give from this experience?
Sure. I think the one thing we say internally, a lot of times you hear a lot of people throwing around the word authentic. We don't like to use that word as much. We like to use the word more genuine, because when you talk about people and you're talking about some of these programs and stuff like that, that's a personal thing. And the word genuine, you always use the word genuine to describe people. You know what I mean? You never say somebody's authentic. You're always like, you know, that's a genuine person. And so it's staying within the crux of the realness and doing it for the right fashion. When we first started this program a few years back, it actually, I kind of got handed the program with a lot of things against me. It was money we had put aside into our foundation, and there really wasn't a plan around it, and it didn't look like it was going to go anywhere. But what we end up keep pushing at it, and it's no different than the story from the folks that I heard before us up here, is you got to have a passion behind it and understand what the bigger picture is and the impact of it. And then once you start to do that, you're going to find people coming out of the woodwork that are going to help you out. And our CEO, whose father started the company, and again, a lot of the DNA of the organization is based on him and his life and just the same aspects. He played sports his whole life. His kids played sports. A lot of the people that work in our building are all former athletes, and we all understand the value of this, so we're in it together. And so I think as we start to go through, our CEO, he actually said, you know, in all the years he's been doing this, this program is one of the things that he's most proud of. And then once you start to hear that, it pumps you up a little bit more, and then we go to year two, and it just kind of builds momentum. And you start to hear, these stories are out there, and people aren't thinking about them as much. And so as we start to kind of raise the story, and you know, using some of the stories like Harlem Lacrosse or Salmon River or, you know, the Martin Luther King school, you tell those stories, people start to kind of come out of the woodwork because they all know the value of it. And it starts to make the process easier. And you got to be willing to kind of let them in.
Joel, just getting your message, you know, I think it's an important thing to mention that it's, and you mentioned this before, it's a school-based program. It's not just a lacrosse program. It's, you know, immersive in their lives. How important was it to you to kind of get outside of just the lacrosse bubble and into a kind of greater populace there with this message?
I think it's critically important. I think we are not, we're not an organization that just wants to give a kid a stick and say, like, we don't want to just spread the game. Our primary concern is the long-term outcomes of the student-athletes we serve. So I think that's why Harlem Lacrosse is able to have kind of had such an echo in some ways, is because our big pitch is we're not a lacrosse program. We're a middle school intervention program for underserved youth. And we're really just using lacrosse as a carrot for, you know, better behavior, better grades. You know, our first kids are all playing either college lacrosse or in college. You know, I think we're really just using lacrosse as a vehicle and a liaison to get kind of better outcomes. So as people understand that, that resonates with people. Like, oh yeah, I was a terrible kid, and then I learned how to play on a team, and things got better for me. Like, that resonates, and that can, I mean, the amount of more people who are going to be invested in what we're doing and be interested in what we're doing is exponentially multiplied than when it's not just people who want to see, you know, kids playing with lacrosse sticks.
It's interesting. We were talking on the phone prior to this, and when you talk about, again, it tying it into the school and what they're around their everyday lives, and so what ends up happening is these kids just need somebody there to be with them. You know what I mean? And that's what makes their struggle bearable. And so what ends up happening? My question to Joel was, now that they do that, you know, you have these kids who kind of are misguided to some extent, and then they take them through this program, and they're paying a lot of attention to them. They're on their backs to make sure they're going to class and they're doing all the right things. And then, they're able to get them into a place where they can eventually get a scholarship, and they go off to school. And I'm like, wow, what happens then? You know, you kind of, at that point, they're kind of gone. And he says, they're still in contact with them. I mean, and that's what these kids need, and that's what they want. And we kind of talk internally a lot about, you know, it's kind of like lacrosse to some extent. You know what I mean? You always feel like you don't want to, everybody always feels like you got to compare it to football, you got to compare it to all these other things. You don't need to. It stands on its own merit. And so when you end up having, we got a lot of slack, you know, from the arts community, everybody saying, well, why are sports more important than the arts? We're not saying that. What we're saying is sports are important, and arts are important as well, too. But one of the things that we know is that we ask anybody who played sports, and you ask them, and not say education is important, but if you say, you know, if you look back at your youth and stuff like that, name me two or three of your favorite teachers, it'd be hard to get any kind of response. But every kid will tell you every single coach he's ever had. So that's kind of just, it just kind of solidifies our belief system.
It's interesting. There's a lot of synergies from what Harlem Lacrosse is doing from the earlier talks that have been going on today. You know, like, how are we going to grow the game? How are we going to get – it's – I think if Harlem Lacrosse has shown anything, it's that it's pretty simple. Like, there's a huge need and want for kids. It's not – we can get, we can't give enough sticks to kids. We're like, kids are knocking down our door to play lacrosse. And it's really just having committed, focused adults wanting to present the game in the right way and then having kids interested in doing it. And literally, that's all it took. That's all, if the Harlem Lacrosse showed anything, is that just a committed, focused adult is all you need to kind of spread the game in areas people had no idea the game could be spread to.
Let's hear for Frank and Joel, and then we'll get some questions.
A couple minutes for questions before we get to our last panel.
Hi, guys. Thanks for being here. My question is for both of you. How should we, as individuals interested and involved in the lacrosse community, continue to tell the story of lacrosse as a whole instead of focusing on the stories like Hampton that added their team this year, or, you know, the Duke 30 for 30, while it was great and shedding light on the issues, how do we not focus on situational instances and tell the story of lacrosse and growing the game as an entirety?
I think you need to start doing it at that youth level. I mean, that's where you're going to start to kind of reap the rewards, is you don't want to get people introduced into the game later on in their lives, though that works. But I think as you start to build culture and stuff and getting the sticks into these kids when they're younger, that starts to kind of build the game and an understanding of the game, and it creates validity in the space.
It would drive me nuts when I was a lacrosse journalist how it was really easy to place a sport in kind of like a two-bit. It was just really easy to categorize the sport as something, and I think like anything, there's lots of shades of gray. And if you go to a game in Six Nations Canada, it is nothing at all like the prep school mentality that every journalist wants. You know, when lacrosse is typified, it's typified in a very certain way. And I think lacrosse is there's plenty of context for everything. And I think people just need to realize that lacrosse, there's a lot of different kinds of people playing lacrosse. And let's just try to stay away from the easy renditions of it. Oh, yeah. So Mike Cummins, he can raise his hand back there, was just hired today, his first day as National Site Director. We have a girls program in Baltimore right now. We're adding a boys program to that. And then we're adding a girls program and a boys program in Boston next year. And we're going to open a program up in Philadelphia in 2017. I said this earlier, I think the power of our program is our model, sticking a full-time staff member to embed themselves in a middle school there, you know, from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., and to really create a middle school lacrosse team. And we think that model is transferable. I mean, if you're a Baltimore person, go to Commodore John Rogers in East Baltimore, and you will see 40 girls who love lacrosse and will do anything in their school day to play lacrosse. And, you know, four of those kids just got full scholarships to go to boarding school. And that's not the only outcome we care about, but that's, you know, that's a beginning step for this to continue to grow and to continue to be transferred to all over. So,
Joe, will you continue to keep that brand Harlem too as you grow?
I don't know. That is a nightmare that I'm trying to figure it out right now. Currently,
it's BCLL, Baltimore City Lacrosse and Leadership, and Harlem Lacrosse and Leadership, but like all things, figuring it out. So.
Thank you. Last question. Quick question for you, Joel. You started saying that some of the kids are now at the age where they're going into college and they're starting to be college players. Have any of those kids expressed interest in coming back to help with the program? And is there like an idea of how you can get your alumni involved to help spread what you're trying to do?
Yeah, I think Frank kind of touched on this when he was talking about community. And I think that's going to be absolutely critical to us moving forward, is just making sure that those kids continue to love and spread the game, and then spread the game to their kids. Absolutely. I mean, people forget we've only been around since 2011. So, but those initial alumni all come back and coach. They all come back and help out. They're all asking how we can help them professionally develop. And kind of our goal is to figure out, like, how much we can do and how much we can help and what we can do. But absolutely, the alumni are coming back, and they're staying involved. And, yeah, and it's going to be critical, I think, for us moving forward.